Hey, welcome to the Mead House. Jeff here.
Chris here.
It is.
What a week, huh?
Yeah, no kidding.
What a week.
Hey, but you know what? When you guys are listening to this, I'm enjoying a week off.
Nice.
My kiddo is, his birthday is a week from yesterday as we're recording. So like probably, you know, 2 or 3 days away when this goes out to the public.
Yeah, so this is cool.
So,
birthday, kiddo.
Yeah, he's having a birthday party. He's going to have like 2 or 3 friends spend the night after the party.
Oh.
They're going to be up late playing like PlayStation games and goofing around and doing, you know, preteen dorky boy stuff.
That they can do because they're younger than we are.
Yeah.
We're going to be hurting. You're going to be hurting there.
Yeah, house needs cleaned and the TV room needs a good once over and prepared for the ungodly chaos.
And the snacks must flow.
And I said, you know what? I'm going to need just a solid day to get through like dusting and rearranging and, you know, probably like take the couch cushions out and beat them with a stick or something to get the dust off of them and all that.
A couple of genuflexes or two, you know.
And like, I may as well take a whole week and just do other stuff around the house that I've been, you know, meaning to get around to. I got like my West garden that's completely overgrown with the bushes I keep trying to get rid of. And like, I might have to get one of those, like, flamethrower things that a propane tank from Harbor Freight and just torch the fucking root system, right?
Yeah, okay.
Excuse the fuck words. And so yeah, no, I've got a whole spate of different stuff planned that is not work related. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, you've earned it. You work pretty hard with your job. You need a break, man.
Yeah, okay. No, feeling a little bit of burnout, and my boss was like, "Yeah, you take the week. That's good for you.
Yeah, good for you." All right. So, first of all, I'd like to thank our listeners.
Yes.
Because we ramble, and we appreciate you sticking around.
Yeah. No, we hope you enjoy our fun, rambly, you know, genuflections and, you know, digressions and things like that. And that's some entertainment for you.
Yes.
I mean, I get to see the listener stats going up and up and up just a little bit every week. And it's a lot of fun to see. It's gratifying to see it.
Yeah,
nothing else.
Huge.
That, you know, you guys are.
And the feedback you guys are giving is kind of nice.
Yeah. We'd love to see. You know, every week there's a few people chiming in on our like Facebook posts and stuff like that. There's, you know, a couple emails coming in. People like will straight up message me on Facebook, just me directly, because, you know, I'm actually friends with a bunch of people in the meat community. So
I'm trying. I'm very trying. Just asking my wife. I've said it before.
You know, anybody that listens, hears your bad jokes, knows how trying you can be.
Oh, the jokes go on. So, and the second, we needed to talk to you about Bacchus and Barleycorn.
Yes. Bacchus has been a great, great asset to the show. They sponsored us right when we were first getting started and said, hey, you know, we were talking about getting this back up and running. They're like, hey, do you guys need a sponsor? And
that was our kick in the pants to get moving faster, to be honest.
So yeah, really,
really nice.
They have been really good to us. They are a fantastic resource just for the homebrew community as a whole, not to mention just us as mead makers ourselves. And they are a fantastic resource for you guys at home, whether you're going to come in and shop in person, if you can make the trip, or if you're just going to shop online. They have everything you need, whether it's, you know, ingredients, equipment, advice, whether it's beer, mead, wine.
Cheese, kombucha, yogurt.
Sake, yeah.
Yeah, it just goes
across the board.
If it's fermentable, they got it.
Right. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Jake started carrying some mushroom supply stuff. I mean, the showroom is pretty big already and pretty crowded already. So.
But somehow he always finds room.
Yeah, no, a couple of those little oyster mushroom starter bricks, I think those wouldn't go amiss, you know?
But nonetheless, and Jake and the people are great people. If you can stop by and enjoy a glass with them, they're always happy to share what they're making at the time.
Absolutely.
And if you can actually be there for a customer appreciation,
even better.
I mean, the community is phenomenal.
It's always an interesting crowd of people rolling through there. A lot of people will bring what they've brought along with, you know, whatever's on tap at the Mead House to drink. I mean, you know, get a designated driver or plan to take your time with it, obviously.
But. Yeah, but, you know, be safe. But I've actually seen people take an Uber home.
Not surprised. Probably very well thought out.
Very, very good, well done. But if you go online, we do have a discount code. MHP10 to get yourself 10% off your order. So utilize that. If you go inside, you can always ask.
And their prices are already pretty competitive to the certain mega stores we don't like to talk about or mention by name. But, you know, one of them is run by guy named Jeff with a similar haircut. So,
Yeah. Yeah.
you know the one I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Anyway, Chris, today we wanted to talk about, well, today we're talking about a particular ingredient that, it's that time of year where it, especially in cooking, it shows up a lot. And then we're also going to talk about some fruit mead because we just, a week or two ago, I saw an interesting experiment. So I thought we would bring that up here. So let's kind of root to ginger and.
Ginger. Well, first of all, ginger, we talked about this a while back. I wouldn't talk about ginger as an ingredient. I don't recommend a ginger mead per se by itself. Simply because, I'm not saying you can't do it. You'd be very light on the ginger because I made a lemon ginger mead. Lemon, but it was a lemon mead with ginger.
Right.
And in secondary, I added the ginger, and it was a 5 gallon batch, and I added 1 ounce of ginger, of fresh squeezed ginger juice. And it worked well. It worked well. I think we've tried it at one time.
Yes, I want to say it's been a couple months, but
It's
I
been
know
a
we
couple
tried it.
months.
The ginger was there. It was pleasant. It didn't overpower
And I'll be honest, I would have brought it with me today if I could have found another bottle. I
it.
know it's out there, I just can't find it.
Well, speaking of stuff that we brought, and I think this will come up later in the kind of the second half of the episode, we've got a Prince Peach Mead, 14% ABV peach. Tell us about this.
Okay, now this was actually a wedding mead from my in-law's in-law. One of my in-laws named CJ got married, and his father-in-law made mead for the first time ever and made this peach mead for their wedding. So he asked us to, as he's a beginner and we're a little more
Sure.
far down the line, he wants to try it. And my first thought is, I don't know your name, sir, but please use a synthetic cork because this one broke because I tried to open it up.
Yeah, quality corks, it not necessarily synthetic cork. I really like the God, what are they? Noma corks.
Okay.
And that's a synthetic one, but the like agglomerated, agglomerated kind of basically they take the a lot of the corks you get at a homebrew store are not great quality corks. Most of the great quality corks actually go to like actual wineries. The really high quality ones, those will go to the wineries. The waste of that, where they're punching into the cork wood, they will kind of like basically food processor up and then use a more or less like particle board to make into these agglomerated corks. But they're actually way better than the cheap corks you get from homebrew stores.
I'm not trying to dish your cork. It's actually a monogrammed cork.
Yeah, it's a nice presentation. It's just, those are.
It broke on me. And that one thing I really hate about cork, those kind of corks, they break on me.
Lesser quality corks, they do that. And they aren't as good for storage either. You'll get maybe 2 years out of that tops. Versus with an agglomerated cork or a Noma cork, the agglomerated you can get 2 to 5.
Yeah.
The Noma corks, I think, are rated up to 10.
Yeah,
So,
10 years for to hold your mead, that's a great idea.
and they are not that much more expensive. Now, peach mead
Peach
for
mead.
a beginner is ambitious.
Yeah, I'm
Now,
I bow to your boldness.
did the first time mead maker realize how ambitious a peach mead is?
I didn't realize my blackberry mead was ambitious. I just kind of ran with it and kept calling you.
Well, and blackberry is not as ambitious as peach. Peach is a lighter flavor. Blackberry is a fairly strong flavor. And a peach mead can also go south with acid really easily because there is a surprising amount of acid in peaches when you consider the flavor of a peach,
Yeah,
just like
that's absolutely
biting into
true.
a fresh peach. So we go by appearance at the bottle side. There's some floaties in here.
Yeah, and I think that's just pectin.
Is it fruit floaties? Is it wax flake from the honey? It's a little hard to tell, but there are some. They look like little white floaty bits.
And
They're not as apparent in the glass. It's
light straw, maybe.
light to maybe medium. It's a fairly light, pretty color.
And so, but appearance wise, it's not bad. I probably would have filtered it one more time.
I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't even find it, let alone filter.
Okay, if you didn't, that's fine. Now, on smell,
It's honey.
it's
There's
honey.
a
Okay, I don't get much of the fruit, but it's there. There's a fruity background.
there's a little fruitiness. There's a little bit of a It's a kind of a funky fermentation, like a hot fermentation note to it.
Okay, so now going to I'm going into the taste here.
It's sweet.
It's sweet.
There's a.
It's got an acid bite.
Yeah, the acid isn't too hard.
No, it's not bad. I mean, it's light to moderate.
There's a little bit of the peach flavor, especially like on the tip of my tongue as the meat itself gets to like the back palate. There's a little like lingering peach flavor. It's not strong. It's not bad.
It's actually quite pleasant. I'm not, I mean,
It's a light for 14%, it's light and really
yeah,
pleasant actually.
it's a it, if I wouldn't have guessed a 14% would have been this light.
No. Is this well and
Because mine aren't.
ethyl alcohol is lighter than water.
Yeah,
So now the generally speaking, the sweetness in this I wouldn't expect to be 14% either. This is relatively sweet for 14%. Sorry, for such a light meat, it's relatively sweet.
yeah.
Light-bodied meat, it's relatively sweet, I should say.
So tell CJ if you're listening, and I hope you do, because I'm going to remind you to listen to this one. Tell your father-in-law that this is actually a pretty good first attempt for a peach
Yeah,
meat.
this is a
I'm
really.
impressed. I don't think I would have done quite this well, to be honest.
I mean, I would like some details on this. Like, how many did we use a peach juice concentrate? Did he use fresh peaches? Like, how much peach
Was it
per
syrup?
gallon?
Was it?
Yeah, like, what the, I would love to hear the process because I think this is a great start.
Also want to know what kind of yeast you used because this is playing nicely.
Yeah, no, I think this is a great start. And, you know, the CJ's father-in-law has a. You know, a promising little go here as a home meat maker for sure. Well done.
Yeah, so yeah, we will definitely enjoy your bottle, sir.
Yeah, we will finish this bottle happily.
Little floaties and all.
You know, if it's yeast remainder, it's high in B12. It's what I keep telling myself. It's healthy and good
Yeah,
for you.
sure, healthy. That's just what I expect from meat and alcohol in general. Healthy.
So
Right.
we were gonna get to ginger first
Ginger.
and. Like you said, ginger, it's not a great primary flavor. And of course, with a lot of meads, what we're looking for is instead of a primary flavor, like a more of a secondary flavor, or at least something that plays nicely with the honey as, you know, a primary pair, so to speak.
Because it's fall, ginger has come out as a flavor of choice for a lot of things right now. And
Oh, yeah.
it's going to appear in a lot of things you're enjoying right now. Pies, drinks,
Right.
things like that.
Gingerbread. We
Gingerbread.
are getting into the winter season, so you know, there's gingerbread cookies and gingerbread houses and gingerbread, you know, all kinds of stuff on top of the usual pumpkin spice everything.
Yeah, but for example, if you were to make your own pumpkin spice blend, this one, you're going to use 16 on this one. This is I got this off the internet. There's several sources, but the most involved pumpkin spice blend I found was 16 parts cinnamon, 8 parts ginger, one part clove, one part mace, 2 parts nutmeg. And 4 parts allspice. Now, I'm saying this is a all the ingredients up. Allspice is not a spice mix. It is an individual spice, despite the name.
Erroneously named, yes.
An allspice. It says it has flavors of cinnamon, nutmeg, clove, and pepper, but that's within the single spice it comes from.
Now you mentioned mace in there as well.
Yes.
Mace may not be commonly known to people that aren't really into baking spices and stuff like that. What's mace?
Mace, you take a nutmeg, the whole thing. The outside shell is ground into mace.
Yeah, it's not necessarily like the shell. It's more the fruity.
The
Well,
fruity, yeah, the dried fruit around it.
yeah, it's kind of like a pith, if you will.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
Yeah,
But
but
I've actually ground my own mace from a nutmeg, whole nutmeg. And I'll be honest, guys, get the powdered mace. It just tastes exactly the same. It's a lot less effort. But mace and nutmeg are the same thing. Just the difference is the pithy outer coating and the nut itself.
From what I've heard, I've not used a lot of mace myself, but mace is a little more not as distinct, not as like
Okay,
powerful,
it
but
is.
not that I would consider nutmeg a powerful spice. I mean,
Nutmeg is not a powerful spice by itself, but however, you have to consider the ratios I just gave you. 16 parts cinnamon
right.
two parts nutmeg, one part mace.
Yeah.
They make a difference. If you were likened to doing a stew, it's bay leaf.
Right.
If you don't put it in there, you're gonna know. If you do put it in there, you'll never know.
Yeah, it's one of those supporting players. Now, like that recipe that you gave said, ginger is like the second highest spice in there. Now, does that, we should probably talk at some point during this discussion about the different kinds of ginger, right? Because is that, I'm assuming that's dry ginger
It's dry ginger.
because we're talking about baking spices. And when it comes to baking stuff, I know dry.
Is one I've looked this up and I found the math behind it. What it boils down to is if you dry a spice from a wet spice like ginger or whatever, you're getting one third potency. You have to put three times as much in to get the same level of potency.
Actually, I've heard almost directly the opposite. For baking directions, it has been suggested that for if you're directed to use fresh ginger, you should actually use one quarter of the fresh ginger if you're moving to powder.
Okay, I could be
And
wrong with
well, and the reasoning behind it is that the gingerol, like the polyphenol that makes that sharp, gingery, bitey flavor, actually, when you like heat or dehydrate it, such as baking,
is
that
gone.
intensifies the flavor
Okay.
instead of reducing it. So you
Okay.
need less of the dry to make the same amount of impact as you do with the fresh.
Okay, well, I will bow to that simply because I looked this up over a week ago, just over a week ago. And I could, and I have slight dyslexia. I could have flipped my numbers. I will own that. But the point is, ginger is such a strong individual flavor. You need more cinnamon to counter that, and a lot less clove to counter that
Right.
to balance it out.
Well, and I think to what you were saying before, I'm not sure that ginger by itself is all that pleasant a flavor.
It's very acrid.
That you want it like ginger and honey by itself. And we were talking before the show, if you think about ginger and honey by itself, that's a cough drop.
It's a cough drop. Exactly.
I mean, if we were several centuries ago and we were making our home alcohols in a medicinal tonic sense, maybe we would be talking different stories here and say, hey, a ginger mead sounds like a great way to relieve the excess of bile in my spleen or
Yes.
whatever. And
I have
pass the leeches,
guaf medicine now. Thank you very much.
sir.
Anyway, but point is, ginger is a very strong dominant and doesn't take a backseat to anybody.
No.
It does not. I mean, when I made my ginger, my lemon ginger mead, I made a very heavy honey or lemon mead. I mean, heavy on the lemon. And then in a 5 gallon batch, I had 1 ounce of fresh squeezed ginger juice. One. And as you recall, we had it last time, a couple months ago, the ginger didn't back off.
No, 1 ounce is not very much at all.
Especially when you're considering 5 gallons. So if you want to make a ginger mead, bless you. Bless your heart. But I don't recommend that. I
No,
mean,
the go is very much a ginger as a secondary, if not like ancillary flavor.
yeah, exactly.
It can be a wonderful thing to add a little complexity, but it is not by itself the flavor we want to like highlight. It doesn't want to be center stage.
If you want a warming mead, the other warming spices can help you round it out. These are the cinnamons, the cardamoms, the nutmegs, the mace,
Right.
clove.
And they're lovely flavors. That's why they're in pumpkin spice and why, like I was just talking about, pumpkin spice is all over the place right now.
And I like it. I mean, yeah, I know a lot of people, you're not a huge fan, but I love it.
The spice blend by itself, I appreciate, even if I don't necessarily like pumpkin pie. Like the same pie spice used in apple pie is it's really goddamn pleasant.
Yeah, apple pie is a little bit less. It's generally cinnamon, nutmeg, and allspice. And
Damn shame not to put cardamom in there
yeah,
because
well.
cardamom is a lovely spice. But I'm this is not Jeff berating people for how they make their pie. This is
Okay, I will
Jeff
tell
talking
you, in
about me.
some pumpkin pie recipes, you do have cardamom, you do have mace, and you even have ginger.
Sure. Some of them. And apple and ginger together are nice too. I think ginger has a lot of applications where, as a secondary or ancillary flavor, it can add just a little next new dimension.
And 3 weeks ago, we made a mulled cider. Three weeks ago?
Several weeks ago.
Several weeks ago, more than 2 weeks ago, we made a mulled hot cider.
Yes.
And ginger works really well with that. It was absolutely fine.
Yeah, we. I don't remember how much ginger was in there. It
I'd
was
have
not
to
a
look at
very
the
big amount.
notes. It was a very small amount.
Yeah, it was ground ginger, if I'm not
It
mistaken, that
was.
your wife had in the little spice sachet she made for us, which was lovely and came out really great. But it was not a big flavor component, but it was there, and I'm sure it added something nice to the whole blend. So let's talk about the different ways we could incorporate ginger into a mead.
If you make if okay, I put mine in secondary after all the fermentation was dead, the yeast was dead, it was filtered. The last thing I did was
Sure.
stir in the ginger.
And you use a ginger juice. Now, did you juice the ginger yourself or did you buy juice as a product?
I bought juice from a natural food store where they juiced it for me right in front
Oh,
of
nice.
me.
So,
So.
because I'm told you can buy, packaged ginger juice.
Read the label.
Yeah. I mean,
I mean, ginger. From I've read a few labels of packaged ginger juice, which is just supposed to be 100% ginger juice,
right.
and ascorbic acid was the most predominant thing after ginger juice.
Right, and ascorbic acid, that's, if I'm not mistaken, that's vitamin A, in common parlance.
I'll take your word for it. I don't know that.
That's another common preservative that is not necessarily bad for yeast fermentation, but it is used as a preservative. You see that commonly in a lot of places. It's better than, something ending in sorbate or ate or ite or whatever, as far as your yeast health and permeability. But that's still, it's there to prevent stuff from taking over and doing stuff with sugar in there.
I think it's probably literally meant to keep yeast inactive that's coming in from the air.
Yeah, yeast,
We talked
bacteria,
about
all that.
you talked about that once upon a time with me, that yeast is everywhere,
Oh,
and
yeah.
just putting a water honey jug out with cheesecloth over it, you can get yeast in there that will ferment
Right, yeah.
it. But it may be simply a deterrent. So But what I got was they took a ginger root, they ground it into oblivion, and pressed it into this 4 ounce thing that cost me way too much for what I got.
And from what I've heard, the ginger juice, the main reason people don't use it is because, oh my God, it's so expensive.
I will tell you, I got a 4 ounce little jar of it. I used 1 ounce for a mead, and I did not use 2.5 ounces of it until it went bad. Before it
Oh,
went bad, because I just couldn't use it a lot, to be
right.
honest.
The ginger, you don't need a lot of it in the first place. So ginger juice, obviously in that secondary application, like right before bottling, or as we're kind of blending in honey and doing the back sweetening step, that seems like a great time to add it, especially if you want that kind of fresh ginger flavor.
And it had one. It was great.
We could also talk about just adding ginger as a base root.
Chop it up, throw it in a bag,
Right.
put it in your meat.
You probably want to peel it. I'm not sure if the peel is going to give you bitterness, but
Don't know how that works. In some cases, I mean, the one reason I'd want to peel it is because I just want to make sure it's clean.
sure. I think there's something to be said for that too. It is a thing that grows in the ground with its own host of different stuff accumulating on top of it. So
I mean, will the yeast win? Probably.
hopefully,
Hopefully.
fingers crossed, but
But if you pull
rather
it,
than crossing our fingers, let's play it safe.
yes, play it safe.
And I think there is something to be said for, okay, do we just basically peel the root and just chunk the whole thing in there, or do we chop it up?
Chop it
Surface
thin.
area, yeah, is probably the win here because you want to be sure that the, much like a barrel for oak, we want to make sure that there's as much surface that we can get in contact with mead and get stuff out of. If you take a whole, inch or two of ginger, just peel it and drop it in there. I'm willing to bet the core of that, you're not going to get anything out of
No, not a
whatsoever.
thing. And by the same token, if you want maximum, chop puree it.
Yeah.
Stick it in a bag. That you can't get more. Slicing it thin, you'll get enough, in my opinion.
Well, and another option is a kind of a ginger paste that I've been told those are available on,
I'm here to tell you they are. I've
yeah.
used them, and it's in a little squeeze tube. It makes
Right.
it very convenient. But it is not 100% ginger.
Right.
There are preservatives, there are additives, there is salt in
Again,
it.
read your label.
Read your label.
One thing that I've been told, well, the other thing we've already alluded to with your spice mix, dry ginger.
Dry ginger.
We've talked about there is a discrepancy between the dry ginger and the fresh ginger as far as flavor goes. I think from what I've heard, you get more of the potency or the kind of burn, so to speak, from dry ginger than you do from fresh ginger. It might be less like flavor rounded. It might be more like in that we're going for the ginger in a ginger snap cookie kind of a feeling with dry ginger as opposed to fresh ginger. So that's something to think about if you're going to use dry ginger versus fresh ginger in pardon me, in a meat.
I'm looking it up. They say that fresh herbs have better herby flavor,
Right.
like ginger and all these other, whatever you're gonna use. Whereas dried herbs have deeper spice flavors.
Right.
Maybe it brings up the complexity, whatever.
Well, and it's concentrated too, right? I mean, like the volume wise, you're taking all the water out, and
And you're
these are
losing the oils,
right.
or a lot of the oils.
Well, in some cases, the oils remain concentrated in the plant matter that's behind, depending on how they do the drying, whether it's like a freeze dry or a like an oven bake kind of a situation. There are a lot of, I'm sure, different nuances there. But this is a first glance part of a plant, and so it's going to have a really substantial amount of water in it. By removing all that water, you're concentrating a lot just by volume.
And looking into what I just saw in that article I just pulled up, yes, the dried is more concentrated. I did flip that in my head from earlier. I apologize. You need one third the amount of dried as fresh.
Well, and there may be some discrepancy between your one third and my one quarter, but yeah, you need a lot less. And this is probably one of those, are we going to give you firm ounce by ounce recommendations for your mead? No, we're
No.
going to tell you to taste it.
You taste it as always because, what I consider a good amount of ginger may be way too much for you or way too little
Right. And
or anything in between.
as the rule remains, it's way easier to add than it is to subtract. So,
And our tasting process that I have adopted, I think, and Jeff encouraged me to put it in, mix it, taste it, let it sit for 12 to 24 hours. Taste it again, add as needed.
and really, it does depend on the ingredient. With ginger or with like hot peppers, that's a taste it daily or every other day, or if not every 12 hours.
Yeah,
Like hot pepper. You gotta be careful with that, otherwise you're gonna make a prank your friend's mead instead of a mead with an interesting secondary or third tertiary flavor.
there is no secondary. It's just pain. Because those of you who listened since I started the first four episodes we did, I thought I was going to die. It was horrible. I'm not a spice hot spice. I've made hot honey mead at request. But and I still have some, which I'm desperately trying to find somebody who'll take it from me because it's not gotten milder. But no, the taste it, find your tolerance. We're hobbyist people. Make it for you,
Right.
and you think one your friends you'll think you'll like it.
And realistically, if you're not sure about something, recruit a small group of friends to help you taste it and dial that in. Like
And you have them.
when I back sweeten, my wife is usually recruited to, hey, taste this and give me your opinion on what I'm doing.
Same thing.
Is this, does it need a little more? Is it good? It would probably be helpful to have a couple other people there with me, but generally I'm doing this at like 9 or 10 o'clock at night after the kiddo goes to bed. So it's not easy to say, hey, Chris, come over in the middle of the night and drink mead with me and then drive home.
You've never asked, so you'll never know.
My own guilt prevents me from getting my friend drunk and then making him drive home or
You mean
sleeping on
drive
the
home? I'll just camp on your sofa,
couch.
anyway. But yeah, taste as you go along because ginger is not a joke, guys. I
No,
mean,
it.
they're especially okay. Listen, the worst ginger mix I ever saw was a ginger peach blend that I saw at a health food store that wasn't a health food store. It was just a general grocery store. I apologize.
Okay. Yeah.
And it was, reading the list of ingredients, I'd be lucky to find 10% juice in that thing.
Ooh. And this sounds like the kind of thing that is like, it's a food product, but it's more like a woo health product
yeah.
kind of a thing than an actual, like, we're going to give you something that's high in vitamins and minerals. We're going to give you something that's going to taste like shit, and we're going to tell you it's good for you.
Yeah.
And you're going to believe it because it tastes like shit.
And it said, good for digestion. I didn't buy it.
You know, ginger does have a number of, like, little side things where it does help with digestion.
Yes.
And, like, I like candied ginger for, like, low-level nausea.
Yeah.
It works.
And nice. I keep ginger beer at home for my wife for just that reason. For the most part, we enjoy drinking it, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, ginger beer is nice. It just is.
But if we have an upset stomach or something, that's our go-to.
Right.
First one we do is that.
Yeah. I mean...
But let's also keep in mind, we're making an alcohol here.
Right.
And by the strictest, even by the most strict and sometimes generous parameters, an alcohol's not good for you. Period. I mean, fun. It's not healthy. Don't think we're making a health food here, guys.
There is a reason alcohol can be referred to as an intoxicant. Please note the median little morpheme in there.
Tox. Yes, it tox. But yeah, can we make a outstanding ginger mead? Yes. Can you make an entirely spiced mead with ginger? Absolutely. It needs support cast.
Mm-hmm. It needs to be the support cast for more.
Mm-hmm. The ginger, even if ginger is your predominant, it needs a support cast to round it out. Ginger is, for lack of a better term in my mind right now, in your face.
Part of
going to grab you by the lapels and say, I am ginger.
Just because we are co-hosts and we do apparently enjoy tormenting each other a little bit for fun, part of me wants to make a ginger mead that is as acrid and attacks my friend as much as that hot spicy mead we had like around the fourth episode we did together. I'm probably not going to do that because even a gallon of that is going to sit
for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, if you do that and I survive it, I'm making a wasabi mead for you.
Expect repercussions.
Yes.
Yeah.
We are friends after all.
Yeah. No, this is a playful duel expects a riposte.
Yes. I could probably do a quart.
Quart. Anyway, moving away from ginger, I saw a video a couple days ago, and it was probably a week or more old by the time I got around to watching it, because... you know, I have other things going on, but
and the fact, you know, there's a lot of mead videos out there. We peruse,
right?
So like, we can get ideas too.
I subscribe to a number of them, and this is one that I subscribe to regularly because I really like his content. Garrett over at Man Made Mead,
he's really good.
Yeah, he does. He follows. If people are looking for video topics about making mead, learning to make mead, I consistently recommend him and Doing the Most because they follow good procedure, unlike a lot of people that I could otherwise name and won't. But no, I've met Garrett. He actually like surprised us and came to the first Iron Bee up in Minnesota years and years ago. It was like really cool to see him, and was not expecting that at all. So just a random happenstance of, hey guys, I'm here to hang out. Cool. But no, he has done some really interesting stuff. And a couple weeks ago, he released a video that was a long time coming. He compared 15 different kinds of fruit, using them in primary versus in secondary. And like, there was a level of experimental nuance here, because like the secondary edition was after stabilization. So it was much more of a, it's not like fermentation has slowed down. Now we're going to give it some more sugar in the form of this fruit. It's now we're going to give the fruit flavor and not let the yeast interact with it. There was no biotransformation taking place.
But mind you, after seeing the video that you recommend, he took a pretty scientific approach here, and it was really a pleasure to see.
Yes. He did a very good job with, you know, an experimental process here that I appreciated a lot. You know, there was a combination of fresh and frozen fruit used, depending on, you know, what he had access to.
Yeah, availability.
What he could get. I mean, let's just go down the list real quick of the different fruits he used.
Now, mind you, he made a 30-gallon batch of mead.
Right.
Separated into 31-gallon batches and had two for each fruit.
Right, but that control by itself is a great step
Yeah.
because that it's the same amount of honey, it's the same honey for all of these, so that the honey is not a factor, the amount of honey is not the factor. And then he back sweetened them to the same like sweetness level. Now, does that necessarily mean they all had exactly the same amount of honey going into them? No.
No.
But there's a level of trying to achieve a commonality and a consistency within the experiment that I think is a good step. So going down this list, he talked about apples, bananas, blackberries, blueberries, cherries, guava, kiwi, mango, papaya, peach, pear, pineapple, plum, raspberry, and strawberry.
Yeah.
And
It was impressive.
right, what surprised me is that there was not a consistent primary is better than secondary across these. Some of them he had for the judging part of this, the actual like stats recorded as such, he had a panel of five other people come and judge with him, and they all entered their own notes that he kind of, what do I want to say?
This is how I quantified.
Right, yeah, he took the notes and kind of like put them all together, and then they also voted as to whether they liked the primary or the secondary, and so.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Starting at the top of the list was, what was the first one he used?
It's apples.
Apples. Yeah. So he did this alphabetically, which I kind of appreciate, to be honest.
Well, and they're collated alphabetically. I mean, not necessarily tasted in that order, but
That's how he presented them.
right.
So what did he say about apple for primary?
Well, and I don't know that we need to go through the primary and secondary for all of these because that
Okay,
would take a
fair.
long time. And
That actually would. Yeah, your
yeah, we're.
time is a consideration. I
But
apologize.
for apples, the secondary was almost universally judged to be better.
Okay.
There were bright floral notes with the apples. There were that were, you know, they were there in primary, but it was more round and pleasant in secondary, which is interesting. And, you know, we'll probably before the end of the episode, we'll talk about some of the apple stuff I'm doing, which is interesting because I'm not putting apples in primary, or I'm not putting apples in secondary. I'm using fresh cider.
This is the Lewisburg cider he got a few weeks ago when we took a trip to their festival.
Yeah, but we'll talk about that after we get through this experiment. And I don't even think we need to talk about necessarily all 15 of these. I'll try to put a link to his video in the show notes and share some love across the mead content, you know, creation eco space here. But were there any of these that really surprised you, Chris?
The kiwi kind of shocked me, I'll be honest.
Kiwi is not one that I've seen used very much,
No,
like as a.
and I feel bad that I have it because I love kiwi.
I'm not particularly fond of kiwi. I've
Green or
seen
cold?
either.
Okay.
Well, let me rephrase. I'm not particularly fond of kiwi flavored things.
Okay, fair enough.
In a lot of kiwi situations, it comes off as a little too sweet and a little too just not appealing to my palate.
Okay, fair. I love kiwi.
It's been a while since I've had good fresh kiwi, so maybe I would appreciate it more. And
You do realize we live in the Midwest and good fresh kiwi is. We do the best we can.
right, yeah. Well, and there are, as a guy that keeps bees and chickens and grows mushrooms, it should surprise you not one little bit that I'm on a lot of like the homesteading forums and stuff.
Not shocked.
And
If we weren't, then I'd be shocked, but not now, no.
there are cold hardy species of kiwi that are recommended for a lot of people. Now, apparently they're one of those, like the plant has sexes, so you have to have a male and a female plant. But people will make like little garden gables over the entrances of their yards and have one or the other growing on the gables. And then they get kiwis that way. Apparently the cold hardy kiwis are not furry. They're kind of like a smooth fruit.
Ooh, I like that better already.
And the taste is similar, but not the same. But you know, we can go to the store and get kiwi year round because one of the reptiles that I feed takes his calcium and vitamin supplements dusted on kiwi,
Okay.
and he goes nuts for it, even if the calcium supplement probably tastes like crap.
No. Anyway, so kiwi. Kiwi is the one that shocked me because I thought it would have been more, it just ran it through my own head. This is not something I've done. I thought secondary would be a better place to put it.
Fair.
But they said they had a slight advantage to primary use.
Yeah, it was more bright and crisp, they said.
And a little bit tart.
Yeah. Which I guess that makes sense. And, the one that I have been thinking about for a while, but never really jumped the gun on, similarly, was guava. And it sounded very much in the same thing of the fruit was more bright and present there in primary. And it lended a little bit more floral and honey forward in the secondary. That really shouldn't surprise me, but
Okay,
there you go.
you're not a fan of kiwi. I'm not a fan of guava per se.
Right.
I mean, it's okay if it's mixed with something, but I'm not really a huge fan of guava by itself, so.
Well, and the Pog mead we had from Sap House a number of episodes back, the little 6% in the cans, damn good mead. And with pineapple and orange, guava is great. Everybody likes
And I loved
that.
it. It was great.
Guava by itself can be a challenging flavor, and that's probably why I've never really jumped the gun on it too. You kind of have to like it by itself, and it's like 6 or 7 out of 10 for me, realistically. I don't know. If I was going to make a fruit forward only fruit mead, I'd probably err more towards blackberry or pineapple or something like that. That is just a fruit I really enjoy. But that's me.
One of them I had a question on for you was the pineapple. Did you use pineapple fruit or do you use pineapple skins too? That was never specified as far as I could see.
I'm willing to bet he just used fruit.
I agree, but there is an entire alcoholic beverage made with pineapple skins
Yeah, that
core.
the well, and we talked about it a while back, like tepache is
Tepache,
made with mostly the rinds of the pineapple, so to speak. The stuff you're not going to use otherwise, you stick that in water along with peel and cilo or whatever the kind of the more natural sugar stuff that they have. And no, I there's a guy next to my in-laws' house that, like, during the summer months, he drives up in a white van and puts a big, like, shade thing over a couple tables and just sells, along with tepache, a number of other, like, fruit drinks. You get like a full deli cup quart for like $7. He's got a dozen different flavors. It's all on ice. It's amazing.
Where is this at?
It's in Olathe, Kansas, on the corner of, I want to say, 100, not 151st. It's
I am today years old hearing about this,
yeah.
and I like, and when he comes back, I want to try that.
We talked about it before on the show. We mentioned this, but yeah, no, remind me in the spring months,
Okay, I did forget about that
and
because I was sitting here. I don't
yeah,
recall this.
we'll go pay Rico Tapache a visit.
I am all for it. Anyway, so, but we have said before, skins are important for tannin and yeast.
Yeah, well, that they also just round out the flavor and provide stuff that not necessarily every skin, like we talked about with the dragon fruit, or not dragon fruit, prickly pear,
Prickly pear.
prickly pear. The prickly pear fruit might have given it a bitterness in there, like the
We did
cheek
agree
fruit.
that that rind of the prickly pear was likely the bitter we tasted.
But with blackberries or blueberries, there's tannin structure there that you're gonna miss otherwise. The difference between a white wine and a red wine is usually the grape skin, really.
Wasn't aware of that, but I figured it was called the grape, but that's just me.
Well, the inside of a bite into a red or a black grape sometime. What's the inside of the skin?
I don't know why you told me it once, sorry, man. I got this big by accident. Not accident.
The inside flesh of a grape is usually pretty light.
Okay, I believe that.
So it's literally like letting it ferment on the skins for a while that gives the red wine its color. And that gives it its tannin structure, the anthocyanins and all that. That's, yeah, that's where that color comes from, more often than not.
I am not that oblivious. I did th you know, when you mentioned, I'm sitting here, you know, I saw it, but I didn't see it, type
Right.
of thing.
Well, and blueberries, for example, are another really strong one. If you want, you can just use juice, and you might get kind of a pinkish, kind of a amber or strawberry color. And I had a really fun, like, I made a blueberry hydromel that I hopped for it was a crossover episode I did with my friends Chris and Neil on the 100th episode of their podcast about movies. That I just brought like a couple carbonated things, and we had a great time with that. I mean, it was bright pink, and it was fun as hell.
That's good. Okay, now again, we're not gonna go over all 15 of these things, but I do know that we talked about Viking mead earlier. That's generally a cherry mead. The blood mead, they call it
Viking's
Viking
blood.
mead.
Right. Well, and
It's not what they drank, I know, but
No, I don't even know. I don't know the natural distribution of cherry trees, to be honest, or
Well,
how they were propagated.
we could look that up before next episode and make an amendment if you want. But I'm not. That sounds a little bit more involved than most Vikings would. They were craftsmen, they were trademen, they were farmers, they were a lot of things. What they weren't is culinarily adventurous per se. They liked what they liked and they stuck with it. I've never heard of a, oh, remember this innovative Viking recipe? No, that they were fishermen and.
To be frank, Viking was a job description, and it was usually like a, hey, I'm gonna go raid and move around, and we'll set a fort up here, maybe. But it was a semi-nomadic lifestyle, I think it's safe to say, and it involved a level of this was not mine before and is now mine.
Yes, it's
So.
mine by possession. Anyway, it's fair. But cherry mead. Cherries are shockingly flavorful.
Yes. Well, there is a reason cherries have been a popular fruit for as long as they have. They're up there with apples that, you get an apple you like and it will grow, and you can go to any store in the country any time of year and find Red Delicious.
Yes, which I personally don't like.
It's a little, having grown up with Red Delicious for my entire, 44 years of life,
Yeah.
it is what I consider the baseline apple flavor, but that makes it boring now.
Yeah.
And there are so many more varieties available. But
I like Cosmo. I like Jonathan's. I like,
yeah, give me a pig lady, man.
Pink Lady. The Honey Crisp. Anything but Red
Sure.
Delicious, please. Granny Smith. If I want a puckering apple.
My kiddo found a, they had a New Zealand variety of apple called lemonade apple.
I am now intrigued.
It's not available all year round, but it is available. Just the price chopper down the street, that's where he got them. That's where we got them for a long time. That quickly became his favorite kind of apple.
There you go.
And like it, apparently it's got a mellow apple-y lemonade flavor that
Well, I told you
sounds
about those
delightful.
grapes we got that were strawberry grapes. They had a strawberry flavor in the grapes.
Yeah. Well, and cotton candy grapes were a big thing a while back
Yeah.
too. And people are doing all kinds of weird stuff with Christ being fruit these days, which is cool in and of itself, but
Not relevant to what we're talking about now. Anyway, so what else did you want to look at for those fruits? Are we good? We recommend the video, guys, to be
Yeah, check out
honest.
the video. The video was really educational and really enlightening. Garrett talked about how he spent something like, I want to say, $800 for all the material and equipment here, and like half of that was just offset by his viewers. So really cool for that case. But
Yeah.
this was a long, involved thing. I want to share some love to him and his efforts here. And it was really.
Mean, I aspire that we can do these kind of experiments for you guys. However, and by the way, I have not heard any feedback from you guys about us doing a video for you guys to help you get started
Right.
the way we do it.
Or, more ideas as far as like what we can offer you in terms of like, rewards and stuff if we were to restart the Patreon, which we're considering
Yeah.
strongly. I
And
would love to do that.
if any of you out there are starting mead makers, let us know who you are. I'm starting out, I'm just a beginner mead maker. Let us know.
Yeah.
We have something in the wings that we possibly might want to bring up if there's people that are just starting their mead journey that we can help you with.
For sure. Another one that I really like that he hit on that I have been thinking about for a long time but have been kind of on the fence on is plum. Because it's another one of those stone fruits that is a light flavor. And,
I brought a wild plum.
the wild plum was fun, but I'm thinking more in the traditional plum, really, like a
Okay.
really deep plum flavor, like the plums you find in continental Europe are usually damson plums, which I don't see represented on in the American, market. Usually we get like red plums or something
Yeah,
like that,
red plums are
which
more popular.
little different. Usually they're more red than purple, and these are more of a like a deep purple kind of a flavor. I don't necessarily know how to source that variety, but it's the kind that you see in, in markets in a lot of European cities, because it's just all over the damn place. It's also the base plum for slivovica, or whatever you want to call it. Like, if you are in a Slavic country, they make a brandy out of this plum. And it's depending on whether you're buying it at a store at a standard rate, or you have a friend who has an uncle that just made it. There are a number of different alcoholic strengths to this, and
Like everything. I mean, 5 to 20% is a mead range guy. So,
this is not a mead, this is a distilled beverage. So if you're
okay.
buying it at a store, you're getting a 40% or like 80 proof. If it's somebody's uncle, I'm pretty sure my friend Petra's uncle brought a bottle of it that was more in the 140 proof range,
Ooh.
and it'll strip the skin off of your esophagus and put hair on your balls in the same gulp. It's a lot.
Now I'm scared.
Yeah.
Intrigued, but scared.
And the fun thing about there is such a an industry for home distillers in the Czech Republic, apparently, that like a lot of cities or the municipalities or like counties, I guess is what we would call it, have like distilling. Basically, it's like a free public use kind of distilling equipment that
Oh,
you
okay.
go into a building with your the wine or the base like must cider, whatever the pre you take all your plums and you let them ferment to the a wine, so to speak,
Okay.
or a fruity cider kind of a thing consistency. You take it in there, you distill it using their equipment. And then you leave something like 10% that the government will sell to recoup its cost for maintaining the distillery.
What a deal.
That's it's surprising and interesting. And like that's just a thing that people decided was a good idea and they implemented it. And I could never see that happening in this country because there's so many teeter tollers and like the blue laws and things like that. But people are distilling in their garages. We know people that probably are distilling in their garages that we can't talk about.
Yeah.
Missouri is decriminalized, Kansas is not, and we're like right straddling the border here in Kansas City. So
Yeah, so but
there are a lot of different
Missouri
approaches
is
here.
not criminalized.
Missouri is decriminalized, Kansas is not.
Okay,
Yeah.
I didn't hear the D in there. Sorry about
Right, right,
that.
right, right. Yeah. So yeah, no, there's a bunch of different ways of approaching that, and it's fun to look at that and say, in other cultures they just accept that that's something people are going to do, and let's make it easy and make it safe for you.
And let's provide safe means of getting it done properly.
Yeah, good equipment that will do it efficiently.
What a deal.
Right.
Anyway, so we've gone over the ginger. We've gone over the fruit. Give us your thoughts. I think we're kind of good to end it here on this one.
Yeah, I think we've covered what we need to cover on both topics there.
But
So,
let's we'll put the link for man-made mead.
and his big fruit experiment video.
Big fruit experiment. It was, I watched it twice. It was just good.
Yeah, Garrett does really good content. If you're not subscribed to his channel and you're interested in mead making, give him a
Do
follow. Yeah,
it.
he does good stuff. A lot of his stuff features BC from Doing the Most. Doing the Most is also a great channel to follow. I would highly recommend either of them, honestly.
Anyway, so guys, happy mead making. Let us know your experiments, what you want to do. Let us know if you're a beginner, because I've got something in mind that I'd like to do to help you guys out. And hey, couldn't hurt to get a little bit of help along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Chris, thanks for coming over. Happy meeting.
Have a meeting.